19th century to the present. He wrote about this today at townhall.com, and he joins us now. Jonathan, thanks for being here.
Great to be with you, John.
So why is it important that people know the difference? And it's, so many people don't seem to know the difference.
Well, they need to understand the difference because, as the Founding Fathers understood it, pure democracy was tyranny. The reason for that is that if a majority can override the rights of a minority through a vote on an issue, then our rights are not secure because any one of us can at any one time be in the minority. So they created a republic, and a republic is distinct from a democracy, and indeed a republic cabins or controls democracy so that it does not violate the rights of the minority.
Yeah, and so if you had a pure democracy, which and you point out in your piece that so many people refer to preserving our democracy and all those things, the majority, there are only the only 12% of our population is black, so the other 88% could vote to have slavery come back again. And that would be pure democracy because that's what the people, that's the majority rule, right?
Right. That was the founders' concern. They noted that throughout history, passion in a majority has resulted in the deprivation of the rights of the minority. And their purpose, their very purpose of creating a constitution and our republic was to ensure that all rights would be protected against government deprivation. And so they meant for our country to be a republic in which there would be a separation of powers and competing power centers with the ability to interdict or veto a measure so that the legislative branches at the time, the House of Representatives, because the Senate did not become direct elected until the 17th Amendment was passed, but the House of Representatives, out of which the spending bills originate, would not be in a position to deny us our rights, even if a popular movement were afoot to do so.
And there are lots of Democrats out there who complain about a little meaningless state like Wyoming getting the same number of senators as a really important places like New York and California. What are they missing? And it's one thing for me or the guy down the street not to, you know, to have an issue with it, but there are people in power, people in government who complain that that's, and I'm talking about people who've been around Washington for a long time, guys like Robert Reich, and you know, saying that it's ridiculous that Wyoming has the same number of senators as California. This is a guy who was in a powerful position at one time.
If they would undo the great compromise that the Founding Fathers had between the big states and the small states, affording the small states the Senate option of uniformity with two senators in each state and having popular a percentage of the population justify, you know, present in the Senate, justifying who you have represent you in, excuse me, in the House. That is a serious mistake because part of the whole purpose of the separation of powers is to ensure that there are different power centers represented but not dominant. So they have to work or compromise to achieve the passage of legislation. That within the confines of a constitution of delegated powers where by its very nature it was intended to be limited in what it could do. The Democrat Party has largely sold its soul to the socialists and now believes in democratic socialism, by which they mean that a popular majority ought be able to take the property rights away from a minority that has property and redistribute it, ought to be able to destroy an entire industry like the fossil fuel industry in order to pursue a ridiculous climate change agenda, which few of us will worry about the climate when we starve to death or freeze to death or fry in the summertime. But it's that kind of mentality which has swept a good portion of the population into a misunderstanding of who we are. America is a republic. It is not a pure democracy. It never can be a pure democracy without wiping out the rights of a significant minority, which changes based on the issue.
Yep.
So you may not be in the minority today, but you may well be in the minority tomorrow.
Well, you are a constitutional law attorney. We're talking to Jothan Emord, and he's also the author of The Authoritarians, Their Assault on Liberty, the Constitution, and Free Enterprise from the 19th Century to the Present. Just as a guy who has studied this stuff and written a book about it, was looking back on it now, was having senators be elected by popular vote a bad idea?
I think it was. I know part of Jacksonian democracy was the push for greater democracy and a dissatisfaction with the inability of the majority to rule without restraint. But that is not a safe place for people who believe in liberty. And if we had an indirectly elected Senate that was beholden to the state legislatures, imagine the presence of power for state issues that would be manifest in the communication of those senators. So, for example, the majority of states in the United States are opposed to mandates, for example, vaccine mandates or mask mandates. A majority opposes critical race theory in the schools, for example. Well, you would hear far more discussion of the need to protect the states in their right to dissent from these administration-favored positions in the Senate if the Senate was beholden to the state legislatures. So by making them directly elected, we've diluted the protection of property rights and of these special interests, which has a negative connotation, but I mean these interests that manifest themselves in the states but not in the national government, such as the ones I've mentioned. So it would be different, I suspect, and in a good way, by introducing more issues of concern to states and localities into federal decision-making, thereby protecting property rights at the local level and the interests of the states against the usurpation of power, which frequently comes from the imposition of unfunded mandates by the federal government, which deprive the states and render them more functionaries than independent political units in our political dual federalist system.
And if you were to suggest to someone or say it out loud that you think it would be a good idea, if you just popped up in Washington, D.C. and started saying, you know, I think it would be a good idea if we had the Senate, the senators elected by state legislatures instead of by direct vote, you would be looked at like you were insane, because most people don't even know that that was the case, that it took a constitutional amendment to change that. And I'm talking about including some people maybe in politics who would think you were insane and wouldn't realize that it actually, that's the way it was supposed to be.
Right. It's we have this, we've since the First World War, principally, we have made the quest for global democracy to be an end-all be-all that everyone is supposed to pay allegiance to. That, of course, was one of the founding cries for the creation of the League of Nations and then the United Nations, was this idea, we will democratize the world. Well, we ought not be democratizing the world. We ought to do what Jefferson did with the Declaration of Independence when he remarked subsequently to how successful it was as an instrument to inspire revolution around the world for republics, not for democracies.
Mike on there. The Electoral College is kind of along the same lines. That pushing back against that seems to have almost reached a level of a movement. What do you say to people, and there are a lot of them, who don't understand why the founders didn't want the president to be elected by popular vote?
Well, they definitely wanted a check on popular will. And you see, in the case of the president, you have someone who has the power, and did have then, to declare war. Congress is to declare war, but I mean to implement a action of aggression or defense of the nation, and it can lead to a war, whether it's defensive or otherwise. And so having the ability to temper passion and hotheads by having a deliberative body as a check. The whole purpose of that is to ensure that there is deliberation and a check on democratic influences, which, left alone, can very singularly, in the case of a person running for president, result in a person of passion being elected with a mandate to do something extraordinary. I mean, you can imagine, in association with this Ukrainian horrendous situation, that if it were election season now, it's conceivable, not outside the realm of possibility, that a person who would swear to use air power, American military power in the form of air power, to annihilate the Soviet air power and balance the scale, but then risk nuclear war, might succeed in drawing the passions of the people and being elected. But it may be that the election could turn instead on the Electoral College vote, which it would, and that might temper that democratic impulse.
Yeah, and would you say that, in general, Democrats are now actually pushing for the kind of government that is exactly what the Constitution was written to prevent?
Precisely. What they seek is really what the Founding Fathers understood to be tyranny. They really are not Democrats in the sense that they don't favor democracy, really. Democracy is but a hook by which means they intend to get into power. But once in power, they intend to rule without constitutional restraints and without regard to the will of the people. It is a totalitarian drive or authoritarian drive that dominates the Democrat Party today. That's why we see this administration, for example, entirely impervious to public opinion. They don't care that gas prices are going through the roof. They mouth platitudes about it, but they are happy to sit there as one-fifth or one-quarter of the population actually is finding it difficult to eat in light of the inflation and in light of the cost of gas. It's very difficult for many people. And ordinarily, in prior days, you would hear the Democrats championing the cause of the working class or of those that are troubled. Not today. And that's because they rule with impunity. They rule by executive order. They don't go to Congress. They rule through the administrative agencies. And they don't seem as though they have to respond to the will of the American people.
We're talking to Jonathan Emord. He's a constitutional law attorney, the author of The Authoritarians, The Assault on Liberty, The Constitution, and Free Enterprise from the 19th Century to the Present. He has a piece up today at townhall.com. You mentioned the executive order, Jonathan. When did that become so popular for both? Because the Republican presidents have done just as much. When did that executive order become so popular for both parties?
So from the founding of the Republic forward, there have been, quote-unquote, executive orders. But those executive orders were largely ministerial until the Great Society with Lyndon Baines Johnson. And subsequently, both Republican and Democrat presidents have used executive orders to achieve substantive legislative ends, which are forbidden under the Constitution. Article 1 of the Constitution, indeed all of the Articles of the Constitution, 1, 2, and 3, have what are known as vesting clauses. And these vesting clauses, in the case of Article 1, puts all of the legislative power, all power to make law, in Congress. None of it is given to any other department. None of it is allowed under Lockean principles to be redelegated out of Congress to administrative agencies. Yet all of that has been done through enthusiasm in the executive branch, blessed by a complicit legislative branch. And what has happened is that these executive orders, which were largely ministerial, in order to get the work done that the executive must do in order to implement the law, it has moved from that to actual lawmaking, where the executive, by executive order directly or by order to the agencies, like Biden just with the COVID mandate, the employer's mandate, have there the Occupational Safety and Health Administration create new law. and that has been a disease really burdening our republic for decades now.
What about the individual states, speaking of edicts and executive orders? Here in Pennsylvania, I was referring to the governor. I made a point of always referring to him as His Excellency, because he was just constantly just making kingly statements and issuing edicts to people about what they could and couldn't do. How many of the individual states have gotten away from a small R Republican form of government that you're talking about?
Well, those types of actions you're talking about, which were done, of course, by many governors, including Illinois and California and Michigan and Wisconsin and New York, those actions are really a violation of the separation of powers. Those are legislative actions that should not have been unilaterally undertaken by the executive, and they should have been, and were in some instances, struck down when challenged in court. But that is an abuse, and our ears should prickle when we hear the language of an executive where they say they are going to compel us to do something, because that is a power beyond their ability to do unless in the first instance there has been a law passed. And even then, if it violates the Bill of Rights, whether the federal Bill of Rights or the state's independent Bill of Rights, it's unconstitutional nonetheless. What we've had is in this fog of COVID and in this trumped-up emergency environment that they've used to their advantage, the Rahm Emanuel notion of never allow a crisis to go to waste, they have usurped powers and made the executives much more threatening to our liberties. They took away our liberties. They denied us the right to travel. They denied us the right to go to specific locations. They denied us the right to congregate in churches. They've done an enormous amount of harm to our liberties, and many have gotten away with it. But we have got to resolve to never allow again a virus or any other condition to be a basis for the suspension of our rights. We have to defend our rights against all comers who would try to take them away. And if we don't, we'll lose them. And if we lose them, they'll be very hard to get back.
Yep. And Jonathan, everybody should be required reading your piece at townhall.com today for a lot of people, especially in Washington. Thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Take care.
Okay, that's Jonathan E. Moore. You can check his piece out at townhall.com. We don't live in a democracy. I'll be right back. When it's time to replace your roof, siding, gutters, and downspouts, entry doors, and, of course, windows, you can count on Windows R Us, the area's premier exterior replacement company. This is John Steigerwald. With over 50 years' experience in the home remodeling industry, Windows R Us offers repair and replacement for all your exterior home projects. Why pay double with some other companies? Windows R Us will always give you the best price on the best in-class products, backed by the best warranties in the industry, all with zero sales pressure. And speaking of zero, right now, get zero interest financing for 12 months and no processing fee. With prices set to increase on all exterior products, lock in your quote today. Schedule a free estimate and inspection today at WindowsRUsPittsburgh.com. You've tried the rest, now try the best. WindowsRUsPittsburgh.com.
Windows R Us. You've tried the rest, now try the best. The John Steigerwald Show, AM 1250, The Answer.
I mentioned Robert Reich when I was talking to our last guest, and so I just real quickly went and checked him out on Twitter. This is a guy who was once the labor secretary. He's a communist. He doesn't know it, maybe, but he is one. He's like Bernie Sanders. This is a tweet from him from December 3rd of last year, about 5 months ago. Reform, here's how we beat Republicans at their own game. This is a guy who was in power and would like to get back into power. Reform and expand the Supreme Court. Abolish the Electoral College. Grant D.C. statehood. Give Puerto Rico self-determination. End the filibuster. That's what he said about how to get power back from the Republicans. And here he is on January 6th of this year. Just remember, Just a reminder, Trump lost the popular vote twice. He lost all recounts. He lost 61 court challenges. He lost at the Supreme Court. He lost in the Electoral College. And he says here, in 2020, Biden won the popular vote by more than 7 million votes. In 2016, Trump lost the popular vote by 3 million votes. Both won the Electoral College by the same margin. The Electoral College needs to go. That's Robert Reich. He needs to get out. Go away, Robert. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
The John Steigerwald Show is a production of the Enter Pittsburgh and Salem Media Group.